the Chinese endorsement content assessment. Commissioner.
Thank you. Another interesting discussion as you look about setting test scores
for Chinese,
as part of the Chinese endorsement.
Okay.
So I'll turn that over to Colleen Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond.
Thank you.
Mrs. Chair, we've made it to the Chinese endorsement assessment, and I'm going to try to move this forward for us as quickly as possible. But first, I would like to introduce the two individuals with me today. The first one is Dr. Nicole Amador. She is from Pearson Learning. They provide us currently with our PLACE assessments, which are our licensing assessments associated with our content for endorsement for our teachers, for our educators. The other person we have with us is Dr. Terry Owens. Dr. Owens is from Educational Testing Service. She provides us with support around the Praxis 2 assessments that are also used for our content assessments. So today we are here presenting the Chinese endorsement. Thank you, Busy. The Chinese endorsement content assessment. Last, I'm going to give just a little bit of background for last fall, and then I'm going to move forward as quickly as I can for us. Last fall, we came to you and we did add Chinese as a foreign language or a world language endorsement area for our educators. We did that under the current foreign language rules. However, at the time, we did not have a content assessment for our educators to engage in order to verify their content knowledge. We promised at that time that we would be back to the Board of Education to make a recommendation on the content assessments that came forward based off of stakeholder review. So that is what we're doing today. In October of 2014, we amassed a group of about 20 stakeholders across the state of Colorado, all of whom were Chinese experts in some way. Those individuals, they were Mandarin Chinese. I also should clarify, it's Mandarin Chinese, not the Cantonese. We did complete a scan of exams that were available across the United States, as well as one that was outside of the United States and provided to us by East China Normal University. This group particularly consisted of Chinese professors, our K-12 teachers, directors of education, and directors of Chinese programs, and also our presidents of our teacher language consortiums for Chinese. The group reviewed the following options for our content assessments. So we took a look at the Praxis 2, the Chinese Mandarin, that's item 5665, the NES, so the National Evaluation Systems Mandarin Chinese Assessment, the International ECNU Online Assessment, that is the one that I was saying was an international provided by East China Normal University. We took a look at the Oral Proficiency Interview through the Language Testing International Services, Writing Proficiency through Language Testing International, and then the Chinese Proficiency Test, which is provided through HSK. We did come to some consensus, and we did quite a bit of standard setting around or inter-rater reliability around what the professional competencies were with regard to the foreign language assessments that we provided. We do know that there is a significant number of Chinese programs growing in the state of Colorado. We have over 80 today, and they continue to grow with more expansion next year.
80 Chinese language programs
we
in
do.
Colorado?
We do, in the state of Colorado, which was somewhat new for me last fall to learn about. So we have a very large number. We have more coming to us pretty much every day asking for endorsements, and we had all of these programs and no endorsements for our teachers. So we're excited that this has come on board for us. As we looked at the content assessment, there were several priorities that we really focused on as we did the scan of those assessments. So the stakeholder group based the recommendations that will come forward here in just a minute based on the validity and reliability, of course, of the assessments themselves, to ensure that they were aligned with the Colorado expected outcomes for our students and our current Colorado rules, flexible for our applicants. That has been one of the main points that many of our educators have also talked about, is that they just can't get enough of those assessments quickly enough. Enough of those assessments. Wow, that sounded really positive. Like, they just can't get enough assessments. Is that the first time you've heard that today? Maybe? But they just weren't offered enough times. And then we also wanted to ensure that they were updated regularly and with fidelity and rigor. readily available, of course, to a number of candidates, not just in the state of Colorado, but across the nation and internationally. Right now, our candidates, our teaching cadre is actually an adjunct cadre, serving 80 of our programs across the state because we did not have an endorsement and the content assessment. So we wanted to make sure that we had a wide net as we looked at these content assessments to be able to bring educators to Colorado to teach our students. We also wanted to make sure that the dissemination of results was very quick. Our educators needed to know if they had passed those assessments quickly so that they could get into our classrooms and start teaching students. And then, of course, the most important part, while it looks the last on the list, it is that it was meaningful for our classroom students, what we were measuring. With that in mind, our group came forward with the recommendations to actually adopt both of the assessments that are more standardized assessments for the state of Colorado as well as the nation. So that is the Praxis 2 Chinese Mandarin exam and the National Evaluation Services Mandarin Chinese exam. The remaining assessments simply did not meet all of the criteria that we had. Now, a little bit of a caveat. For those of you who have been very in tune with the PLACE assessments that are provided by Pearson for the state of Colorado, we are not reinventing the PLACE. We are actually moving over to an assessment from the National Evaluation System that is an online assessment similar to that of other assessments that we are moving forward to. So right now, PLACE is paper and pencil, and that's important to know. So this is a transition over to an online assessment. This will be the first online assessment that we've engaged with from our Pearson partners. We have also, at the time, we did go through the recommended cut scores and benchmark scores for these, and the stakeholder group is recommending that for the national evaluation series, the Chinese Mandarin assessment, that the national benchmark score of 220, which is the same score that we have for actually all of the assessments associated with national evaluation series. And then also the national cutoff score for our Praxis 2 of 164. So they are recommending that we go with our national cutoff scores. I am going to go ahead and move very quickly through the process of multi-state standard setting. For some of us that are a little bit newer to this process, when we talk about the national cut scores or the national standard setting scores, what we're really talking about is a large cadre of individuals and panelists that have deep knowledge and skills in the content areas that come together to review and identify what those standard cut scores would be. It is actually a very rigorous process associated with it. And I will let you read on your own the Praxis 2 process for multi-state standard setting, as well as the national evaluation series. I think what I want to reiterate there is that it is a large number of panelists that come together to think very deeply about what is it that to experience the assessments, which you can certainly ask Dr. Amador and Dr. Owens about as well, but to experience the assessments and be very well in tune with what those reliability and what the validity of those assessments are to be able to set those cut scores. With that, I will reiterate one more time, we are coming forward with a recommendation. This is an information item only today, but coming forward with a recommendation for our Chinese content assessments to adopt both the Praxis 2 Chinese Mandarin assessment as well as the NES Chinese Mandarin assessment with the national benchmark scores. Today is our information item. We welcome any and all questions for Dr. Owens and saying that I'm going to have them answer the questions. But we welcome any and all questions, and then this will come back to you for adoption or vote or more discussion in May as well.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Board, any questions? Deb?
Thank you. I wonder if you can address this. You know, whenever we look at assessments, we're looking at least at reliability, validity, data privacy, alignment, comparability between tests, cost, access for taking the test, item choice, bookmarking I know is used with PARC, which Pearson publishes. I'm not sure what the technique for choosing items is on this test and then on the ETS version of it. So is there a way to get some answers that compare features in that respect? And then why Pearson and ETS? Are there other companies that have these assessments? Is it beneficial to have more than one option? Is it detrimental to have more than one option? I mean, I appreciate the recommendation, but it's always nice to know the subtext of that. You know, and I know that some of the databases with ETS, I think, are national in all 50 states, I'm not sure Pearson has that presence, at least on these kinds of assessments. I don't know. But I just think that, you know, if this is an information item, does that mean the next time we address it, we're voting on it?
Chair, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So I'll answer a couple of questions for you, Dr. Sheffield. The first one is, yes, we would be coming forward with a vote, potentially an action item for next May. This is our period which we get to answer all of those questions. I'm absolutely committed to providing any additional documentation that you'd like to see between then and that time. If we decide that that's not enough documentation by May, we can certainly move this out as well. But I do want to give you some background. You asked a really great question around why both. Is it beneficial or is it detrimental? And this was
or
a question.
Or is it better to have four? You know, it's just like what?
Absolutely.
How do we think about it?
I think it was a great question. So we actually went down the path of having two. We had a very nice split in this panel between native Chinese speakers and non-native Chinese speakers. And educators of foreign language. One of the most interesting things is that what it came down to, literally, was we felt they were incredibly comparable across all avenues associated with that. What it came down to is our native speakers were very interested in having the actual instructions in Chinese. Our non-native speakers were very interested in having the actual instructions for the assessment in English. And that is one of the differentiating factors associated with these two assessments. And we really did. We researched that quite a bit, going, I wonder really what is comparable for us. Right now, our foreign language assessments do have the instructions in English for us because they are provided by Pearson at this point in time through PLACE. That will be, you know, a transition or a migration that we can talk about in the future as well. But that's what it came down to. So a little bit of background behind that. And they really wanted to recommend both of them for a couple of reasons. One, that. And the second reason is that Praxis is more nationally available across, or more nationally known, I think. And more of our institutes of higher education use that. I do also think that they talked a lot about how are we going to ensure that our folks who are used to Pearson models and PLACE models in the state of Colorado, how are they going to have enough focus and service for that as well? So those are two of the reasons that they really came forward to go back to where we were talking about with regard to why both. We did evaluate several others. They did not meet all of the criteria. And I can certainly get you more information on that as well.
Because I'd love to see some kind of spreadsheet that compares cost, access, comparability, how are items chosen, what's the blueprint of the test, reliability and validity based on what, I mean, I'm interested to see if Pearson's using Park's, the same approach to bookmarking as is used in Park, or is it a different approach? What does the blueprint look like? I mean, there's just a host of questions that would be helpful, I think. At least.
Mr. Chair, really quickly. Dr. Sheffield, is that something that you would like to see in addition to? We kind of provided a little bit of a side-by-side comparison, so yeah. Something you'd want to see kind of in that way, but in addition to that, as we talk about it with...
Well, let me look at that more deeply and see which of those questions are answered.
Okay, and it
I
may
saw
not
some
be all
of them,
so.
But it didn't seem like it was
great.
In
okay.
depth, but I can email you. Maybe
sure.
That's easier.
That'd be great.
Same here. I left it at home because I was devouring that the other night. The two-column chart that I remember seeing in my head, there was a price. One was considerably higher, maybe twice the price of the other. Don't remember which was which and why. Does it have something to do with the online? One of them is purely online or not, right, Colleen?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
They're actually both online now. They will both be online. And I'm going to try to defer because I think if we hear from both of them, they will be able to give you just a little bit more depth about the price. And you're right, there is a price differentiation between the two of them.
Dr. Owens?
Madam yes. Chair, members of the Commission, thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak to this. Ours is the higher priced one. It's at $150, and I believe the Pearson one is $95, if I'm correct. And the primary difference for that, for the price, I believe, is our constructed response. We have four written items for the writing part and four for
tasks that are also constructed response and the speaking. And beyond that, we have 75 that are selected response. We have digital speech capture. The entire test is online, but it's primarily the way it's graded and the way it's produced online. It's a little more in-depth, I believe, and that is the primary reason that is more. It's the human element that takes to score each one of those with 75 selected response, but 8 constructed response, and that would be the primary reason.
Which is something you should be pretty familiar about, just talking about right now. Just a last comment, observation. What we're talking about in terms of instructions being given in English or in Chinese for the two exams and the type of audience, I guess, so to speak, that's completely what we were talking about before in the prior topic.
So,
sorry. So it's just, it's the whole, all of this relates. It's anything around language, literature, literacy, linguistics, it's all related. So the conversation about and the purpose for putting English instructions on one type of exam for a different audience versus in Chinese for perhaps a different audience is interesting. So I appreciate the parallels.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair, members. Just to a little bit more information on that, it is the number of constructed response items which do affect the cost. As far as the instructions in English or in Chinese, there is a blend of that on our test. For example, in the listening items, so it's all digital audio, it will be in the target language, of course. So they are expected to be able to understand those instructions in that way. And then also just, oh, go ahead.
Really quickly, the OPI part of it, the proficiency, the last mention of a type of assessment or a part of assessment is the oral, I assume the oral proficiency. How is that administered?
We do have a written performance item on the assessment as well as the speaking performance assessment. And again, it's all computer administered year round by appointment. There's no testing windows. And so you go in to this computer center and you'll have a microphone, much like this. And you'll have earphones, and you hear the audio stimuli that way, and then you produce your own speech response in that same manner. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Madam Chair, just to answer as far as the English, the instructions on our test, the praxis test, is also in English, and all the questions, of course, are in Chinese. But we also differentiate, one of the things I forgot to mention, it's in traditional and simplified Chinese. And they also use the phonetic system of pinyin, and that's part of their capture when they do that.
Thank you so much. And then also there was a question over here that I thought I could address fairly quickly, since I'm not sure it is in the materials that we have provided to you. And you were asking about a couple of things. We do not use the PARC method, the benchmarking. We do use modified Engoff, which I believe you're familiar with, which is pretty much standard in this industry, and not just for teacher licensing, but for many licensure fields. So, and that's the method ETS has described as well to you. We do have a national presence. This exam is available elsewhere, and so that does help with the portability of recruiting from out of state, if that's an interest to you.
Thank you.
And what scale is it based on, Terry?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Terry, what scale is it based on?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm not sure what the question is. Are you talking about the standards or on the scoring?
The score. Well, I know that when I worked for ETS, we had a scale. And for the Spanish test that was based, this was for teachers, that was based on the Foreign Service exam, which is 0 to 4.
We have a scale that goes from 100 to 200 on these tests. And the CUT score, which was determined by a multi-state panel, standard-setting panel. We had 37 panelists representing 18 states, and currently we have 21 states that use this. So we have.
It's on the standards, but what about the language?
The language is ACTFL, and then the class.
Well, the scale. It goes from. Well.
We have rubrics.
Rubrics.
Yes, I'm sorry. We have rubrics for the eight constructed response. We have rubrics that are set out, and I don't know what the scale is, but generally it's a 1 to 6 scale on those. And I can look up and make sure that that's the exact number within the scale for the constructed response.
So it starts out as very basic to, like, native to educated PhD?
Yeah. Madam Chair, ours is the target audience is a mixture of what would be bachelor candidates and masters. And so within the listening, and in fact I can get it to you exactly here, we have it's on two different levels. Mm-hmm. And with the listening, it's more at a higher level, and the reading. But for the writing and speaking, this is more the entry-level person. This would be your bachelor candidate.
So it's different.
Yes, it is scaled a little bit different.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just wanted to respond also to that. We do score our constructed response, the performance items, on a 4-point scale, one being somebody who represents little or no command of the content area, and 4 being a very strong command. And we do score them on purpose, organization and coherence, development, syntax and grammar, vocabulary, and mechanics. And then for the speech, in addition to that, vocabulary, fluency, and pronunciation.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the crosswalk, Colleen. I think most of the questions are answered. There are just 2 I might email you that aren't in there, but that's great. I wanted to ask Terry from ETS. Can you speak to the comparability feature aspect of these scores across states? I mean, you have a presence in all the states, or how does that compare between Pearson and ETS? Pearson and ETS, yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I could answer that. Yes. I don't know how many states this is used in for Pearson. I would have to defer to Dr. Amador
for
that.
ETS.
But for ETS, it is used in 21 of the states that we have. Okay. We have 39 states and territories that use Praxis directly. We have 48 where we have a presence where they're using one or more of our tests, but 39 of those are primary Praxis. So the portability right now is with the 21 states that adopted this. And the score is set by each state individually. We do have a recommended score from our multi-state standard-setting panel of 164, but it depends on the state whether or not they want to pick that up. In this case, 18 out of those 21 states adopted the 164, and the remaining 3 chose a different score, which it's their prerogative. Each state has that latitude to choose their own score by their own review or their own standard setting.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Any more questions?
I apologize, Madam Chair. Dr. Scheffel, did you want to know how many places we were with our Pearson opportunities?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I don't have the exact number. I will get back to you on that. But I can tell you today that we do have a 91% pass rate on Chinese Mandarin exam specifically. As you can see in your materials, the national benchmark is set at 220 on a scale of 100 to 300. To date, the mean total scaled score is 264.3. And that's very typical of your world languages, where you do have a lot of native speakers coming through and testing through the programs.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any more comments, questions? Thank you very much. That's very interesting.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Love it.
Our next going into item 17, do you want to take a short break before we do that?
No.
What is 17?
Oh, okay, but I thought we were going to do this one. 17. No, that's next. Okay. Okay, we're going to tell them that we're putting that off. Oh, we are going to take cover. Okay.
No, and you know what? I think there should be a subword.
Which one are you talking about?
Look out.
1601. Oh, he's got that, but then the next one is by Steve, too. Well, 16 and 17. Yeah, I get that. But, okay, well, this is.
What?
And if we don't get out, we might be just on that. Okay, because I was going to say we don't want to lead over to 4 o'clock.
Motion, I can deal with it. It might also be going to.
That subject, okay. Just give me go to find it. Because I don't have a sheet.
You need to do like.
Whether they're watching,
look what
they're looking at.
It's the back.
You need
to do
some sheet.
What's that? Oh.
Sorry. Steve's going to make a motion at the end of it.
That is exactly
the motion. Steve will make a motion when we finish it.
Well,
we were waiting for the sheet. We've had this sheet so many times today. It's just on where we've been.
The
numbers
sell.
Who was the gal who gave me Barb? Darla. Darla gets to speak first because I'm registered.
I have never taken a selfie except by mistake.
Oh, there she is right there.
Did you ever turn her over to me?
I did not get up in the morning planning the perfect.
All right. Group, we're ready for public comment. Surprise, surprise, we haven't done this enough today. So this is another session dedicated to testimony on the Healthy Kids Survey. We will have our usual public comment at 4 o'clock at the end, or at the end of our meeting, whenever that may be. So if you're, this is just for Healthy Kids. And we're going to start with Darla Barthos because I cut her off last time.
Yes.
Thank you, Darla.
Madam Chair, board members, I'm Darla Bartos. I'm the mother of 5 children, a grandmother of 11, 4 of which are so lucky to reside here in Colorado. No matter how close you are with your children, you do not hear all of their problems. You do not hear all of their questions. Plus, young people across our state do not often have an opportunity to share their voice to improve the odds for them and their peers. This Healthy Kids Colorado survey asks important health-related questions, providing a sounding board for children to have a quiet and anonymous say. The information gleaned from the survey is voluntary and it's anonymous. No student, parent, school, or district is required to participate in the survey. And most importantly, the results inform parents, schools, administrations, communities, and the state about how we can all help young people succeed. And isn't that what we're trying to do? I fully support the way the survey is done now, giving districts the power to choose what's best for them. Local control is woven into the fabric of Colorado. Why should this instance be any different? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Michelle Holian, followed by Patty O'Rourke. Michelle? Tell me it's Michael.
I'm not Michelle, Madam Chair, members of the board. Michelle Holian spoke earlier today in the morning session from DPS.
Okay.
But I'd like to speak on behalf of Placebridge Academy, a Denver Public Schools K-8 school. They have been using Healthy Kids Colorado data for a number of years. In fact, I think they were the first school to incorporate Healthy Kids measures into their unified improvement plan. So I'm going to say this in her voice. We use the Healthy Kids data to inform student programming planning, and help support staff and teachers understand how to best serve students. They utilize data to manage resources and plan programs, and without this data, we'd be making uninformed decisions, and it would not be the best source, resource use, nor would it provide health and wellness support for our children they need to receive. The data helps provide enhanced services through targeted grant writing and specialized services. With the current opt-out survey consent structure, Healthy Kids provides much-needed view into the behaviors and attitudes of the majority of PlaceBridge students. It provides children with a non-judgmental and safe way to advocate for themselves and to honestly express what they know and believe. PlaceBridge has used student data to help develop programs that support student wellness. In 2012, data use indicated that middle school students in all three grades, 6 through 8, were experiencing depression and considering suicide at rates greater than they expected. This led to the development of a program for all students that provided information, skills, and resources. Without Healthy Kids data, which represented 98% of their students, they would not have known that depression and suicide was an issue. Healthy Kids Colorado survey also provides longitudinal data so that they can evaluate the effect of programs on student health behaviors as they move from grades 6 to 8, and most importantly, as they get ready for high school. They've used information to design intervention programs as well as acquire grant funding for additional program support. Healthy Kids data has had a direct impact on our students, families, and community. PlaceBridge serves a population of students and families that are, by many health and wellness measures, very fragile. DPS and PlaceBridge Academy are committed to supporting them as much as possible, and in order to do that, we must have accurate representative data. Opt-in consent would significantly decrease the validity and reliability of these data. We ask that the board maintains the current process of Healthy Kids Colorado survey consent to help PlaceBridge Academy and DPS collect information to meet student need. Thank you.
Thank you. I love the way these people have this time. They do so well. Go ahead. Yes.
Chairman Neal and members of the board, I'm Patty O'Rourke. I'm a nonprofit professional and the parent of two teenagers who attend Nederland Middle Senior High School. I urge you to allow the school districts to maintain their authority in determining the best way to administer the Healthy Kids Colorado survey in their district. A safe school environment is incredibly important to me and my family. In a perfect world, emotional and substance abuse issues would be dealt with at home. But we all know that not all families can provide the type of support to their kids that they need. This leaves many kids at an increased risk for substance abuse, suicide, bullying, and other risky behaviors, the consequences of which Coloradans all know all too well. We've all learned some important lessons in this state about the risks that bullying presents. Colorado has one of the highest teen suicide rates in the country, and we all have seen the suffering caused by school violence. We all know that environments where kids are bullied can often result in terrifying consequences for the entire school community. Kids, especially middle and high school students who are feeling suicidal, ostracized, or bullied, don't always talk about the issues they are facing. I want my teachers, school counselors, and principal to know when kids feel threatened in their school. I want them to have the data around the risky behaviors their students are engaging in. I want them to have this data without adding an opt-in process to what is already a heavy workload for them, without adding a financial burden in a state where schools are already struggling financially. The results of the survey help identify the strengths and weaknesses in my school district, providing important information to not only my school staff, but local nonprofits and physicians as well. The data allows these important professionals the opportunity to focus limited resources on addressing the most pressing issues within our community. It is our responsibility to know what the kids in our community are struggling with and address the issues before they lead to irreversible consequences. While it's always best to learn about kids through open conversation, that isn't always available. Most of our Colorado high schools and middle schools sometimes have hundreds, if not thousands, of students going through their doors every day, and it's impossible for teachers to connect with each and every student. Often it's our most vulnerable kids who remain silent and risk falling through the cracks. The Healthy Kids Colorado Survey is a voluntary, anonymous survey that provides our state with vital information about the health and well-being of Colorado's middle and high school students. It is Colorado's only comprehensive survey for monitoring adolescent health behaviors and attitudes, giving communities, schools, and their partners valuable data to help them appropriately serve the needs of youth. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. This is good. Taylor?
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you all. My name is Taylor Stein. I'm speaking to you both as a young person from Colorado, as well as the Youth Advocacy Coordinator of Colorado Youth Matters Youth Council, whose role is to advocate for medically accurate and age-appropriate youth sexual health education and services. In order to best support educators and parents across the state in helping young people make informed decisions about their sexual health, Colorado Youth Matter needs the data from the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey in its current form, so that we may truly understand the behaviors of youth and create effective programming to encourage healthy behaviors. Personally, I am 24 years old and grew up in Lafayette, where I attended schools in the Boulder Valley School District. While I love Colorado and consider it my home, I felt forced to leave the state in order to attend college in a place where I felt more welcome and accepted for who I am, which is gay. It is this experience as an underserved, underrepresented, and underacknowledged youth in the Colorado system that drove me to now work as a youth-serving professional in my own communities, and it is why this survey is so important to me now. I personally participated in the survey back in 2007. I answered it honestly and at the time thought it was cool that my state cared about my health. However, it wasn't until 2013 that the survey included questions about lesbian, gay, and bisexual identities. The glaring absence of these questions when I took the survey sent a powerful message to me that as a gay student, I was not supposed to exist, that I was different and weird, and did not have a place in the school. This message was reinforced by the glaring lack of services for me as an LGBT youth. The LGBT students that I work with today confirmed that this message continues on. In the school districts that choose not to participate in the survey or choose not to act upon that information that they learn from this data. When we don't ask these questions or acknowledge the problems that young people are facing, we are telling them that their problems do not matter, that we do not want to talk about them. The latest survey revealed that lesbian, gay, and bisexual students in Colorado are 6 times as likely to have attempted suicide than their heterosexual peers. And this does matter. This is personal. This is about me. This is about my peers and the youth that I work with on a daily basis. And with this information, we can and must take action. With this survey, as it is presently being conducted, schools, districts, and parents and families have a checkpoint to ask how they can better support the young people in their communities. This survey allows us to shift from reacting to crisis to preventing health risk before they happen. It allows youth to develop the tools that they need to stay healthy into adulthood. In its current format, the survey not only gives us useful data, but also sends a powerful message. It tells Colorado's young people that we care. By making the survey more burdensome on schools and therefore less accessible to students, there will be fewer services available for the youth who truly need them. Instead, I encourage you to keep telling Colorado's young people, their teachers, and their families that Colorado and the education system we are so proud of supports their values and values their health and lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Gina Milan. Gina? No, Gina. Bill Letson.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, Board of Education, I am Bill Letson. I'm a native of Garfield County. pediatrician, and I happen to be the medical director down in El Paso County. That's not in Texas, by the way. We get that frequently. I am not going to go into a whole lot of detail about the public health and scientific reasons that those of us in this field would be opposed to an opt-in provision. I think that was done very elegantly by Dr. Ghosh and Dr. Milenkovic this morning, and I would just say I support what they had to say. Really, I'm in support of what the people from the education field have had to say, as well as many of the parents who've talked. So I think I'm just going to give you another example of why I think this is important, and it is extremely important for those of us in El Paso County, because unlike the CDC survey that people use for quite some time, this is a Colorado-specific survey that gives us local data right down to the county level, which we did not have in the same fashion before, and that's extremely important. If you're looking at issues of teen suicide, which has been mentioned, substance abuse, which has also been mentioned earlier today, that's an interesting issue and a very Colorado-specific issue now in terms of this survey giving us an ability to track adolescent uptake of marijuana in a consistent fashion and then actually use the data to take that issue, teen suicide, look at it scientifically and design interventions to alter those behaviors, and then you can track it later. That's really the importance of the survey. I would just use as an example something that I'm doing currently, which is sitting on a child fatality review committee for El Paso. And although I've seen the statistics, I think I was really shocked to learn that roughly half of what we're reviewing are teen suicides. That is an unhappy task. And this survey gives us an ability to have some insight into why that is such an issue, not only in the state, but at the local level in El Paso County. And, of course, many other important issues. But I think that's one that I would just like to bring up today in part because I can also address it as a parent. Like Dr. Milenkovic, I have personal experience with teen suicide. I was lucky in that our kid made it. He's currently an assistant professor in performance studies at Northwestern University, but boy, I can tell you there were times when it was just kind of not fun to get up every morning and deal with what might happen on that particular day.
Thank you.
And I think that's really all I need to say about it, and hope that will go towards supporting our position that opt-in is not a good idea, because scientifically it might well just destroy the utility of the whole process.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jill Hunsaker. Ryan. Jill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. And I wasn't here this morning, so I apologize if I repeat some of the information that you've already heard. My name is Jill Ryan. I'm an Eagle County Commissioner, Vice President of the Colorado Board of Health, and a parent. I'm also a longtime public health professional with a master's degree in public health, and I have a history with the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey. Before moving to Eagle County 10 years ago, I spent part of my career at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, working in the Adolescent Health Section. We helped to administer what was then called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, or the YRBS, which has evolved into the current Healthy Kids Colorado Survey. Our challenge then, as it is today, was getting enough schools to participate in the survey to have data that was generalizable to the entire state, and not just the group of students that took the survey. This is important because if the data are not generalizable, they cannot be compared over time for trends. They cannot be compared to the National Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which asks many of the same questions. They cannot be compared to other states, and they cannot be compared to counties. In Eagle County, we use our local survey data to consider student health behaviors over time, and then compare them to Colorado and the U.S. School participation and student participation are voluntary. If you change the process so that parents required to opt in, I think it will effectively kill this data source for Colorado. Not because parents won't opt in, but because the administrative process of doing so provides one more barrier to getting enough numbers to have a representative sample. As a public health planner, I've always relied on this data source to understand adolescent health issues in order to design and evaluate prevention programs. As a policymaker, I still rely on this data source to make decisions. I will give you a few examples of how this data gets used. Colorado's teen birth rate has been decreasing and is now less than half of what it was in the year 2000. Nationally, the teen birth rate has been on the decline for more than 20 years. Is this because more teens are using contraceptives, or more reliable methods? Or are more teens delaying the onset of sexual activity? The answer has programming and educational implications. This survey asks the right questions to give us the answers. Marijuana use among teenagers is another example. What impact will the legalization of marijuana have on this age group? The Healthy Kids Colorado survey told us that in 2009, marijuana use among teens surpassed cigarette use for the first time. Have highly regulated cigarettes just become too hard to obtain? Will regulated retail marijuana stores make access to the drug easier or harder for teenagers? A University of Colorado and Mount Montana State University study using YRBS data, or in Colorado's case, the Healthy Kids Colorado survey, compared states with medical marijuana laws and those without, and found that there is no evidence of an increase in marijuana use among minors in states with medical marijuana laws. On first blush, it looks like regulation may be a good thing, but we need ongoing data to conduct the same study in states where marijuana is now legal.
Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.
Nick Walker.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board. Good afternoon. My name is Nick Walker. I'm the advocacy chair for the Society of Health and Physical Educators in Colorado, also known as SHAPE Colorado. SHAPE Colorado is a nonprofit organization composed of physical educators who provide leadership, professional development, and advocacy not only in the state of Colorado, but at a national level. SHAPE Colorado works in conjunction with the Colorado Department of Education as well. In addition to being an advocacy chair, I am also a physical education teacher in Denver Public Schools and a proud parent of two girls who attend schools in the Brighton School District. I am speaking with you today to urge you to support preserving the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey in its current form. From my personal experience, we should not look at the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey as just a survey, but as a support system. As a student growing up, having access to a survey to express concerns would have been very beneficial to me in dealing with bullying, suicide, and health behaviors. I was fortunate to be able to reach out to outside resources to assist me with these struggles, but not all students know what is out there, and not all schools have the resources. This survey provides as much needed information to support our students through difficult matters as they may not express otherwise. In this ever-changing young generation, any tool to be proactive instead of reactive puts us all at an advantage. If you change this current method, not only will this be a disservice to our students, but it will be hurting our schools, our community, parents, and partners. As a representative of SHAPE Colorado and a physical educator, I fully support the implementation methodology that is in place today. But more importantly, as a parent, it is imperative that we give our children a support system that assures them a voice in a secure and safe manner, as well as resources to help guide them. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Lauren Kakara?
Shikara.
Lori Odom will be up after.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board.
My name is Lauren Chikara, and I'm the Safe Schools Manager at One Colorado, the state's leading advocacy group for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Coloradans and their families. I'm here in support of the Healthy Kids Colorado survey and the importance of maintaining the current collection process of the survey. One Colorado works to ensure all young people in Colorado have access to schools where they can learn and thrive. In 2011, we used the Healthy Kids Colorado survey to inform the Colorado anti-bullying law. Since then, we have worked to assist 125 schools in updating their school and district non-discrimination policy and anti-bullying policies to align with the state law and ensure all students feel safe in Colorado. The DOT has also been used to support the development of gay-straight alliances and allies and diversities clubs in the middle schools. These organizations impact school climate, encourage peer-to-peer support, increase the levels of connectedness of young people to their schools, and lowers incidence of bullying in their schools as well. We also work to help students become community members by participating in student government. We work with administrators to address bullying at all levels, and we really want to connect our young people with their greater community and encourage them to participate elsewhere. According to the 2013 Healthy Kids Colorado survey, lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth are twice as likely to be bullied, three times more likely to smoke cigarettes, and six times more likely to attempt suicide. There is no other state-administered survey that collects this information, and this is really important for us and the work that we do. Changing the way the survey is administered will do a disservice to Colorado students, especially those who are in at-risk communities like LGBT students, young people of color, and people of disabilities. I ask you on behalf of One Colorado, the 168 letters of support we have sent to you today, as well as the 591 letters I just put on the table, that we have written to the board in support of the health and well-being of our young people in Colorado, to keep the survey the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Cindy Kronosh.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair and the Board, for allowing me to speak to you about the importance and benefits of the current administration of the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey in Weld County. Again, my name is Cindy Kronagy. I'm from Weld County Department of Public Health and Environment, and I'm a member of the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey Advisory Committee. I spoke to you last month, but I have a couple more comments today. For over 20 years, as you know, Weld County Health Department and our partners have been working successfully with 12 school districts to voluntarily administer the Youth Risk Behavior Survey or the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey with each school district's preferred consent method. Most districts choose the opt-out consent method, what I call the opt-out consent method, which still directly contacts parents on written forms, but only requires them to sign and return the form if they do not want their child to participate in the survey. This method informs parents, keeps the time and effort on everyone's part to a minimum, and is something that school principals, teachers, and parents appreciate. If the board takes an action to remove local school district preference and choice here, survey participation rates could go down very significantly. In most opt-in consent schools in Weld County, for example, student participation rates range between 10 and 30%, as opposed to 65 to 95% for those opt-out consent schools. And as a result of these lower participation rates, they may be less representative of the student population and not reflect the most accurate picture of student behaviors and attitudes. On the positive side, the benefits of the survey are numerous and include things like parents, students, and others learning the actual percentages of student health behaviors rather than under or overestimating them. One Weld County school, for example, recently was able to dispel a myth that bullying was on the increase when it was in fact on the decrease in their school district. The survey data also allows parents, school personnel, and others to support students succeeding in school and in life. For example, several school district parent surveys have revealed that these survey data resulted in more parents and their children talking with each other about not using drugs or drinking alcohol. Parents also reported that they welcomed the data because it helped them to share their values and aspirations with their child. So, in summary, the current survey administration allows each school district to determine the most efficient and effective way to conduct the survey. The current process is very much valued in Weld County. Changing that process will be a detriment and not a benefit in Weld County. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time. Annette Garcia. Karen Axe.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman McNeil and members of the board. My name is Karen Axe, and I'm a proud parent of a transgender child, Shannon, in Boulder County. I'm also the founder of Trans Youth Education and Support of Colorado, which is a PFLAG affiliate. Over 200 families from Colorado have, with transgender and gender-expansive youth, have supported us, one another, through our organization. According to the 2013 Healthy Kids Colorado survey, students like Shannon are 2 times more likely to be bullied and 6 times more likely to attempt suicide. These statistics are far too real for me. 8 years ago, our family made the difficult decision to allow our second grade child to transition from male to female in order to save her life. Now that she's happy, thriving, and successful in school, we know we made the right decision. The greatest challenge we faced as was a school district that was unprepared to keep her safe. As a result, my daughter was isolated, bullied, and failing in school. Not wanting to relive her horrible experiences, she often kept them to herself, trying to pretend they didn't happen. As I've since learned, this is a common response for children as they try to cope with this level of discrimination. By age 9, Shannon was overwhelmed and threatened suicide. We were forced to move to a district that had the necessary services to provide Shannon with an opportunity to learn and mature like any other child. Because she now feels safe in her school, she is making great progress in academics, at times surprising her teachers with rapid improvement. She's gained confidence and become an outgoing, charismatic child that she was meant to be. Now she loves learning. She takes school very seriously and works extremely hard. And one picture may be worth 1,000 words. This is my confident, beautiful daughter who's doing really well now. This survey is vital to our families. We want to make sure the next generations of parents are able to make better informed decisions for their children. My daughter did not speak when she was bullied, but she may have been able to check some boxes on a survey. The Healthy Kids Colorado survey is a voluntary and anonymous survey designed to identify these unspoken dangers our children face. Those who work with our children can then find solutions that work and confirm their success in later surveys. They can save children who may have otherwise been lost to institutions or worse. The decision impacts us all. I hope you will keep my daughter's story in mind as you make your decision. For a healthy Colorado, we need healthy kids who are succeeding. The Healthy Kids Colorado survey is an important tool to help make that a reality. Thank you.
Natalia.
Thank you.
Well, you weren't Natalia, you were Annette, right?
Karen.
I'm getting
sorry?
Natalia.
It was Karen. Karen.
Yes.
What? She was Karen.
Got it. Okay, but is Natalia here?
Oh, of course she is.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairwoman and members of the board. My name is Natalia Verscher, and I'm the Tobacco Program Manager at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And I'm pleased to be here today to speak to you about the importance of Healthy Kids Colorado survey to our efforts to prevent youth initiation of tobacco use and to help the kids who do smoke to quit. I have information for you to consider as you make your decisions that could result in severely limiting reliability of the survey data. The resources for public health and prevention and tobacco control are scarce. The data from the survey, along with the other surveillance systems, allows us to target program funding by identifying interventions that present the greatest opportunity for improving the health of Colorado's children. The data provide both a leading indicator of needs and indicator of success. The leading indicators include identifying youth who are susceptible to begin smoking and use of new products such as e-cigarettes. And the indicators of success include tobacco initiation and smoking cessation data for program accountability. Tobacco remains the leading cause of preventable death and disease. More than 88% of adult smokers started before age 18. Through regular surveying of Colorado middle and high schoolers, we have reliable and nationally comparable data about youth experimentation of tobacco use, current smoking rates, and quit rates. Because of the survey, we know Colorado has been successful in reducing the epidemic of youth tobacco use. While this is a very good news, we are concerned this data also tells us this, the progress on reducing smoking among youth has slowed. We have no other way to collect this information or to monitor our progress. Without the Healthy Kids Colorado survey, we would only have enforcement data from state and federal laws that ban sales and tobacco to minors. This would severely limit the program ability to adequately address the problems of availability of tobacco products to minors. Progress to reduce youth initiation of tobacco could be threatened by the introduction of e-cigarettes in Colorado. Nationally, youth use of e-cigarettes increased threefold from 2011 to 2013. E-cigarette was associated with increased intentions to smoke cigarettes. In 2013, the survey found that over 15% of Colorado high schoolers reported they have tried e-cigarette at least once. And we need more information, not less, to better understand use rates and trends to these new products. Without reliable data from the survey, we would not be able to meet the obligations of the state statute or Centers for Disease Control surveillance requirements and demonstrate effectiveness of the program. The survey is not a burden to students or schools. In fact, in 2011, statewide partners completed a successful merger of risk behaviors and health-related surveys into one Healthy Kids Colorado survey. This was done to reduce burden on schools to limit surveying to every other year while creating efficiency with data collection. Requiring new mandates on the survey at this point in time would reverse the progress we and our partners across the state have made administering the survey together and add significant administrative costs to all levels, making it much less likely to our program to be effective. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else here that wishes to speak to the Healthy Children? Because I don't have... Are you doing Healthy Children? And okay. I don't have either of you on the... Didn't you? Anyway, let's take you and then we'll end up with Anita, okay? Mm-hmm. Are you Sarah?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi.
Thank you, Sarah.
Sarah Sampaio from Monument. And yes, I'm going to speak to the Healthy Kids Colorado survey. Much ado has been made about the hardship involved in informed consent process, opting in. But schools conduct these all the time. Field trips, school dances, sports assemblies, even the elective courses that my child had to sign up for, I had to read through 4 pages of information and sign. It wasn't the end of the academic ability to continue. And I find it very troubling that everybody thinks that simply informing and having the parents' consent is the end of a process because we do it all the time. I find it hard to believe that that would not allow appropriate data and protection of children. In addition, if it is truly anonymous, which they repeat over and over and over, how can they identify the children who need help? We've heard heart-wrenching stories about individuals. These surveys cannot address those individuals because they're not identifiable. We keep hearing it's voluntary. Voluntary for who? No one has specified. Does the child volunteer? He can't. He's a minor. Does the parent volunteer? How can they? They have no idea what they're getting into. Does the school district volunteer? Well, somebody said yes. It's up to the school district. But they don't own the right over the child to do that. They are not the parent. Voluntary for who? What does voluntary mean? Now I'm going to use the letter that they had outside, that you guys had outside, that they used for last year. And according to this, I'm going to give you a fact scenario. I'm going to take half your salary unless you object. It is purely voluntary, and if you want your money to remain in your account, please sign and return this form within the next 3 days. Really? My husband for several years worked on an in-depth doctoral study on Miranda rights. In his opinion, this survey, the children need to be read their rights before they should answer. And I said, the objection is that we don't know the name of the child. He said, I can rewrite the survey so that it would fit. You have to leave out the school, the class, the age, the gender, the height, the weight. What else is in there? And so what school you're, what grade you're in? All of that can't be in there. Your race, the language, none of it, because we can identify you. We identify criminals with less information. We don't need your name to know who you are. One person said today that it was Colorado specific, and it gave all this local information. Outside in the hall, the Colorado Department of Health told me this survey has been around for 20 years and comes from the federal CDC.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anita? I'm sorry, I just assumed you were here to talk about Common Core. You've got a different topic today. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Anita Stapleton, and I'm from Pueblo County, and I am here ambivalent, really. I am in objection to the Healthy Kids Survey because of the way I found out about it. My son had taken it for the last 2 years, or a survey much like it, once we had this document in our hands, 120, 121 questions, we read through each and every one of them. Now, mind you, my son is 17 years old. My middle child is 20. She graduated last year, and she as well took this survey, all unbeknownst to me, the parent. This is my biggest objection to this survey and others like it. You are invading and, in my opinion, raping my child's mind. And not only my child's mind, but my personal information, because the Healthy Kids Survey to date also incorporates information about the parents and about the neighborhood that we live in. That, to me, goes hand in hand with none other than the state longitudinal data system that we were all bribed into taking. Grant monies, once again, follow the money, were given out in 2005. Grantees up to $20 million who agreed to instill these programs. This information that you're gathering through surveys, tests, assignments that devy into my child's personal opinions, attitudes, behaviors, value systems is illegal without parental consent. It breaches state, federal, and international law. In 2010, the National Center for Educational Statistics released a technical brief about guidance for statewide longitudinal data systems. And this is where you'll find the information that goes over all the money that's given out to the states who devied into this. Things like political affiliation or beliefs of student or parent, mental and psychological problems of the student or the student's family, sexual behaviors and attitudes. I can go on and on and on. When I brought this document to this board 2 years ago, I basically was labeled a conspiracy theorist. Now, me, the parent, I'm the demonized one. I'm the problem in the school system. Why? Because I have authority over my child. I should have the right to consent if this information is going to be shared with my child. Now, I'm a nurse, and believe it or not, I was a pediatric nurse early on in my career. I am not a prude, I am not naive, and I'm not a helicopter mom. We sat down and went through every one of these questions at our kitchen table with my children and their friends, mind you. And you know what my son told me? And he testified over across the street at the Capitol. Mom, what are you worried about? When we answer these questions, we don't give valid information. This is a joke. We all mark we had sex 9 times. We've done this drug and that drug. We live in a pretend world on this.
Thank you.
I challenge the validity of the data.
Thank you for coming. All right. Anyone else? John, we'll take you at the end of the meeting. Is that okay? because you're speaking about something else. Mr. Durham, you have a...
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. We just, at about lunchtime, received the Attorney General's opinion on this matter, and I don't think we've had time to digest it properly. So, therefore, I would move that we lay over consideration of the Healthy Kids Survey and instruct staff and request the Attorney General to provide updated collateral materials along with suggestions, including suggestions for time frames of dissemination of the collateral materials for review by the board at its next meeting.
Is there a second?
I second.
Pam, seconded by Pam. Any discussion?
You want to translate that into English?
Yeah.
Please. Kind of everyday English. I know that. That was across the street speech.
Well, item one is to lay it over, not take any action
right.
in this meeting. Item two is to, we have some of the collateral materials that have apparently been revised.
What's the collateral material?
The collateral materials are the letters that go to the school district, superintendent, principal, and parents.
Guidance materials.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I call them collaterals, but... and so we can look at those and determine whether or not they, in fact, provide meaningful consent. And then how are the parents informed? How far in advance do they get the materials so that they have an adequate time to review them?
Any discussion, Deb?
Yeah, I think the information also that we're lacking is, do we have any control over the content of the survey, any control over the way the data are analyzed, the correlations that are creating assumed relationships, I think
are... Are you adding that to his motion?
I'm just helping justify why we need more information.
Oh, okay.
Because we, I mean, it seems to me that we lack a lot of information about this survey.
All right.
And what our role is in the Department of Education with the survey, so I think we're seeking additional detailed information.
Any other comments? Deb? I'm forgetting your name.
Angelica. I've been Deb a couple times today. Pretty cool.
Deb talks a lot.
Mr. Dill, could you give us a four sentence?
Don't do that.
Yeah, I think it's fair to the folks to find out what, very
Mr.
roughly.
Dill,
Mr. Dill can... He can do it.
Four sentences, she said, I'm counting.
Madam Chair, does that count?
No,
I'm done.
I'd say four words.
The Attorney General issued an informal, a formal legal opinion on this matter. They looked at the revised procedures for the 2015 administration of the test, determined that if those administration procedures are followed, then this would be a voluntary survey, and therefore the statute at issue, 22.1.123, would not apply. They also indicated that the statute gives authority to the State Board of Education to determine the sort of indicia, factual indicia, of whether or not the way a survey is being administered makes it voluntary or required.
Thank you. You did a good job.
Good job,
there.
Four sentences.
Any other comments? I would just add to Mr. Durham's comment, particularly for the many, 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 many people, all but two, I think, who came and testified in favor of the Healthy Kids Survey, not to take this as if we found some big barrier. We did find a lot of questions and a lot of things that brought up that we do need more discussion. That were in the Attorney General's decision, and there's a lot more discussion that needs to take place, and for that reason we did determine, or we certainly authorized Mr. Durham to come forth with a motion to put it off until next month. So, but don't lose a lot of sleep over that, okay? I'm just speaking for me. I can't speak for the board. I'm just saying, as far as I'm concerned, don't lose a lot of sleep over it. Do you want to call roll, or do you have
Deb's got it.
I'm sorry, what
did you...
Do you
want to call roll, Deb?
No. What did you mean by losing sleep over it?
Well, of all the people that have testified in 2 weeks now, which I have no many, as by my count, all but two of them urged us to follow through.
I'm just saying,
my count may be wrong, don't take me at that, but I'm just saying, for myself, not for the board, for myself, not to be very, not to take that as, many people sitting here are going, oh no, they're going to back out. Now, we don't know. We had a lot of really good discussion this morning, and I felt good about it. But it just showed that there were more things that we needed to think about. The Attorney General's decision came along with that. I'm not saying one way or the other, but I'm just saying if you just, give us some time. We'll have a good discussion about it. Yes.
Well, and I think that's because the people that testified are people that know about the survey because they work in the entity largely, or they're advocates for the survey. Parents are just waking up to it.
Okay. No, that's your, I'm just saying, don't worry about it. I mean, you may worry about it. I shouldn't say that. You're right. But there was more decisions and discussion that came up, and we thought it was we needed to take more time, and today would not have been a good day to do that.
Madam Chair, I'll decide what to lose sleep about, okay?
What?
TC. That was a joke.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. You want to call?
You said don't lose any sleep over it. I said I'll decide that.
I know.
Yeah. Steve Durham.
Aye.
Dr. Flores.
Aye.
Jake Goff.
Aye.
Pam Masnick.
Aye.
Marcia Neal.
Aye.
Dr. Sheffield.
Yes.
Dr. Schroeder.
Yes.
Motion carries. We will continue the conversation another day. Board needs to take a 10-minute break.